So Scott is one of CDC's health communication leads. He's worked, as I mentioned, on the FEMA trailers, on carbon monoxide poisoning. He was a health literacy consultant for the Deepwater Horizon oil spill response, which also resonate in this part of the U.S. And so Scott is going to talk today about planned and less planned approaches to indoor air. So, Scott.
I'm a little old school. I have handwritten notes. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and thank you, Doug, for inviting me. As Doug said, I want to talk about a couple healthy homes, indoor air quality projects we've worked on in past years. And take a little step different here. This is going to be much more of a pragmatic discussion of what we did. And hopefully you'll get the underlying point. If not, I'll be thoroughly pedantic. Again, like everyone else, I have no money. And you've probably seen these in the book or somewhere online. These are the basic session objectives. So this is the first example that I want to talk about. This is a carbon monoxide poisoning, or CO poisoning. I'll probably keep saying that way from now on. And what CO poisoning is, just to give you the brief background, carbon monoxide is produced anytime you burn fossil fuels, charcoal, gasoline, oil, wood, anything like that. And to oversimplify, what happens when you inhale it, CO binds to your red blood cells, and that keeps oxygen from binding to your red blood cells, and that's generally not a good thing. So every year, there are about 500 what we call unintentional non-fire-related CO deaths in the U.S., 20,000 or more emergency room / hospital visits, and uncounted more that poisonings that don't rise to either of those levels. Back in 2006, up in Portland, we did the first and to date last national conference on CO poisoning prevention. And on the communication track there, we learned from the states and larger cities that were in attendance that they didn't have the capacity to produce materials that were based in audience research and really looking at what the audience's needs, wants, and knowledge were. And so at the time, we did have that kind of ability, and we contracted, as it turned out, with RTI, and that's how I know Doug. So we took a very deliberate and stepwise approach. First thing we did was look at what we'd already done. EpiAIDS, if you don't know, is Epidemiological AIDS Investigation. When CDC gets invited by the states to come out and investigate something, the shorthand of that is EpiAIDS. You frequently see them published in the MMWR. We'd done some quantitative research on portable generators, which is one of the main sources of CO, and CO detector use back in the middle of the last decade on the Health Styles survey. And we'd also done, this isn't too relevant to what we're talking about here, but it was very interesting, some focus groups with people who had recently immigrated from mostly Central America and were now working as migrants in the U.S. and had concepts of airflow that weren't quite the same. So they would be likely to perhaps use charcoal indoors because their homes in Central America were very, very airy. Again, we followed a process, and so we did the literature review. Really, Doug did the literature review, and we had months of formative and field working. This is all residential poisonings, by the way. This isn't occupational or boating or something like that. So we looked at summer storms being hurricanes, the issues there being people using generators or charcoal and wanting heating and cooking and electrical power sources. We did winter storms. This is especially ice storms. And the additional issue there is heat, of course. We did non-emergency residential poisonings. This is your heating system not working the way it's supposed to. Or warming up your car in the attached garage are the two biggest things. Then we crunched all that, worked with a group called Vangent. Got that right, don't I? Vanguard, and designed prototype materials. Then we went out and did it all over again, basically. So the states were, at that time, what they could do was design materials and, you know, and print them, of course. So very quickly, the findings, most people didn't think that they were at risk of CO poisoning. Most people don't service their furnace as often or as professionally as they should. Most people with portable generators put them where they've used them before, on the sound thought that it hasn't killed me yet. And
So this might be in the portico, in their carport, in their attached garage, back porch, something like that. If you don't leave here with anything else you remember, don't use a portable generator or charcoal grill anything less than 20 feet from a window, door, or vent. Most people aren't sure to where to put their CO detector. Basically, three things to remember. One, it should tell you on the box. Two, if it plugs into the wall, you got to use the outlet. And three, our recommendation is put it where it's going to wake you up if you're sleeping when it goes off. And most people don't change the batteries correctly. I'm sure everyone in this room earlier this month when they changed their clocks checked all their smoke detector and CO detector batteries. True? Yeah, some of you are lying, I'm sure. All right. So our objectives for CO were focused on these dichotomies. Is it an emergency poisoning or non-emergency poisoning? Is it winter or summer, whether it's emergency or not emergency? And especially, is it primary or secondary prevention? Are you trying to prevent the generation, for lack of a better word, of CO in the first place, or are you trying to get warned when it happens? Long story short, if you want to think in terms of the four Ps, the lowest cost behavior for people was the CO detector. Buy it, slap it on the wall, hopefully maintain the battery. And actually, every 7 years or so, get a new one. So not that we don't put all the information in our materials, but that is kind of what we've decided to push. So we came up with the toolkit. As I said, this is for the states. So this sits at the NIFIC website. NIFIC, if you don't know, is the Organization for State Public Information Officers and State Health Departments. And it's there for them to download it. We have some copies here of the printed parts of it, but please take them, so because you never leave APHA with enough paper. And it includes all the research that was done. And the other thing about these, the files that are there, they're adaptable files, so people can download them and put their own local information on it. That was something that the states had expressed to us was very important to them. Just to give you an idea, this is some of the things. A lot of web material, things that can be printed, things that can be reformatted to other uses. We also included some strategic approaches and suggestions on how to use these things. There's some radio scripts in there, if I remember correctly. And although it wasn't part of this project, we did attach to that same site some television B-roll we had shot a few years earlier with some other money that people can upload and, if they're trying to pitch to a television station, use. So, this is the second example, the somewhat less planned example. But I hope you'll see the commonality of the approach. Of course, this happened right here. If you don't remember, back in 2005, Hurricane Katrina blew through here. And some of you might not remember as well, Hurricane Rita blew through here a little more than a month later. A little to the west of here, and Rita was the bigger storm. In the aftermath of those storms, FEMA provided temporary housing units to folks who had completely lost their homes or their homes were too badly damaged to live in for a while. So fast forward to 2007, we at CDC are getting reports of people living in these temporary housing unit was the term, with burning eyes, burning throat, some other symptoms. They had a lot of formaldehyde in them. It's in the in the wallboard, in the cabinet board, things like that. And formaldehyde is a potential human carcinogen as well. So we were asked to investigate, CDC was. Our challenges, we were working on a very tight deadline. This was 2007, it was going to be 2 years after the storms. We were working with everybody and their brother on the federal, state, local, and non-government levels. We had to outsource some of the key communication tasks. Since we were doing this rapidly, we went with a communication firm that we were already contracted with, which happens to be in Seattle. So that had its own challenges. And of course, we're getting a lot of media attention to this. Our primary audience was, of course, the residents, people living in these units. But we had a lot of secondary audiences, local public health, local clinicians, state and community-based organizations, national and local media, what we at CDC euphemistically call policy audience, and the business community. The trailer manufacturers had a vested interest in what our studies found. And we were dealing with some audience factors. Mental health issues and substance abuse refers to there was a great deal of stress here after the storms. And so that led to those issues. So I'm not saying that people here generally have mental health and substance abuse issues. And there were also upper respiratory infections we're hearing a lot of. And that wasn't formaldehyde. You don't get infected with a chemical. and there were safe and affordable housing concerns. FEMA, in some areas, temporarily became the de facto public housing authority, which was definitely a challenge for them. So, again, we started with what was already there. We went out and tried to find who all the community-based organizations, faith-based organizations were. We tried to find the key contacts, and we worked with some stuff we had at CDC. At the time, the database we used was PRISM. These days, we use a different one. The way PRISM basically works is you throw in a zip code or other information, and it spits back out at you, this is the demographics of people who live there, this is some of their media habits, that kind of thing. It was a little iffy for this because that data that they used was collected before the storms hit, and you know, the population kind of shifted where they lived afterwards. But again, we followed a process, a little less deliberate, but it was following the process. So the next step was to do the formative research that we could, really rapid appraisal, building on the web search and doing days, not months, of formative research. We contacted those organizations, talked to representatives. We sent 2 4-person teams, 4 to Louisiana, 4 to Mississippi, to do some needs assessment, talking to public health partners, community-based, faith-based organizations, and others. Okay. This was the findings. The first one actually is from FEMA. You're all probably familiar with the iconic FEMA trailer, the little thing that you could stick on the back of a truck and carry along. That was the biggest group, but there were 3 different sizes. There were those. There was what was called the park models, which are the size of what you'll see in a trailer park. And there was your basic mobile home manufactured house. So people are living in all 3 of those. Probably all know there's lots of Vietnamese-speaking people here. We found a fair number of Spanish-speaking people living in the trailers, and essentially some of them were subletting. They'd moved down here to do the rebuilding. A lot more active community advocacy in Louisiana and Mississippi. We were a very trusted source, and actually the biggest health concern people had was mold. You might have noticed, well, not today, but it's usually pretty humid around here. So there were other indoor air quality issues with the trailers as well, but I don't really have that much time to go into it. So our objectives, again, 2 here. In risk communication, you try to empower people with things to do. So we try to give people things they could do to address the poor indoor air. What can you do about mold? What can you do about secondhand smoke? Well, don't smoke. What can you? You know, that's always a good, safe CDC message. People used a lot of pesticides and cleaning fluids. You know, we tried to encourage people, don't do that so much. You can't ventilate these things too well. But there were a lot of other indoor air issues too. Think of those small trailers. Somebody salvaged everything they owned, stuffed it in there, and is living with it and their family in there. And then we provided alternate strategies, medical referrals, which is something we usually do. And FEMA, to their credit at that point, was telling people, look, it's a problem. You want to move out, come see us. We'll put you in a hotel in a couple of days. And then we had the scientific investigations going on. The big one at that time was what we called the 519 study, because we studied 519 temporary housing units going in and measuring the formaldehyde, and we wanted to explain to people what was going on, assist with participation, and keep an open dialogue with that. Okay. So I'm getting there, Doug. What we did was all based on the field research, a lot of printed materials, radio materials, what we call the laundromat posters. Unfortunately, in this picture, it's right next to some cigarette ads. But when everyone's living in trailers, temporary housing units, no one has a washing machine. So we could hit people up when they're, you know, bored to tears waiting for their laundry to see our materials. They were also going to little mom-and-pop stores a lot because maybe they didn't have other transportation. And the third place everyone was going to the parish here, county in Mississippi, office where if you're rebuilding your house, you got to go in and get permits for your electricity, for water, things like that. So that's where we hit people. We did our materials in 3 languages, and we did announcements. I'll get to what I mean by media in a second. In blast fax, for people who don't know, that's just spamming people by fax. If you ever get those things on your fax machine that say, come take our cruise, that's a blast fax. So the other thing we did was 15 public availability sessions. From Moss Point, almost Alabama, Lake Charles, getting over towards Texas in 2 weeks. It was a rigorous 2 weeks. And we had over 900 people show up for these. We presented the findings of the 519 study in the simplest format we could. discussed all the other air quality issues, took Q&A, and distributed our materials. So, last slide.
Okay.
Like I said, there's nothing earth-shattering here. This is just very pragmatic. Meet your audience where they are. Know them the best you can. Don't talk down to them. Don't overpromise. Don't guarantee you're going to stop something in its tracks. Be open about bad answers. We had to say the best answer for you might be to go to that hotel. You know, be simple in your language and images, even if you work with epidemiologists. Be simple in the actions, like that secondary prevention action for CO was the simpler action. You might have no time or money, but remember the data of some kind is out there. Community opinion leaders, local media, very local public health and clinicians. Go ahead and do the lit review, even if you're doing it as an ongoing thing while you're out there doing your work, because you'll get some insights from that. And you know, if you work in a state or have contacts with CDC, reach to your contact, and maybe we can get you some access to some of those databases to try and get some of that information that's out there that your tax dollars are paying for. So do the formative research you can, maybe in-depth interviews, maybe real quick and dirty field testing, buttonhole people with prototypes. I can distinctly recall doing that a few times, and what does it say? Oh, not what I thought. And keep in mind your budget and your time. TV actually probably would have been good for FEMA trailers, but we didn't have the time or the money. And just in general, Pinterest is not universally appropriate. Words to live by, and thank you.